The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Good afternoon and welcome to A Lawyer's Edge. I'm in the studio with my good friend and brother Marine, David P. Trotty. David, how are you doing this morning?
I am blessed. Well, this afternoon, you mean?
It's morning.
I'm good.
It's really morning somewhere.
It's morning somewhere.
I've had my head in a computer for about 4 or 5 hours. This is like morning's daybreak for me.
Well, you should be. You've been on vacation for like, what, 45 days now?
No, it's been about 2 weeks.
Really?
Well, a week in between. But you have to understand, when I go on vacation, as he says it, most people don't bring their laptops and work for 3 hours in the morning before they go touring. I do, because I have to. Particularly when you're running with this guy.
Exactly.
You never know what he's getting into.
I cause no trouble.
You go anywhere fun? You leave town?
I went, my son was part of a cultural exchange through CISB. And he went to France. And then I went and picked him up in France.
Okay.
We went over to England. And then we came back to France and then back to the United States.
Mm.
And then for my son's birthday, he just turned 15. We went down to the Keys where my sister is. They've kind of recovered from that little hurricane that some of us know called Irma from last year.
Right.
Destroyed her house. Just took the seawalls, took the boats, dumped all this mush in her pool, and the water, you know, it came from the back door and went out the front door. One of those deals.
Wow.
And, of course, the reconstruction, but it was good. We were back. We always go down there to Lobster for his birthday. Have you ever worked a bully net? Have you ever used a conch shell? And at sundown, I'm a trumpet player, so of course, it comes natural, but blew a conch to usher in the sunset exactly at 8:05?
I've never done that personally.
I've never done that.
Then you haven't lived.
Sounds like a lot of fun, though. A
lot of fun.
Next door to my sister, for the people out there, they will know him, Howard Livingston. He is a well-known singer and has a band in the Keys. I call him Little Jimmy Buffett. He also has golden retrievers, which is near and dear to my heart. When we blow the conchs at night, he comes out and he leads the band blowing the conchs. Howard plays guitar, but he also plays trumpet and he's a singer.
And you play conch shell?
I do. And if you're a trumpet player,
right,
you have the chops, but you also have the diaphragm. Now, he's a drummer. I don't know what he's got.
Former Army, he knows how to blow a conch.
Of course I do. Former Army. That's what we do. We blow shells. But no, it was quite the week. But anyway, David, the first thing he noticed was he said you actually look like you have a suntan.
That's right. You know, about 90 days ago, you look white as a ghost in here.
I was white. I was sick. I was white, and I was I couldn't get outside.
I've never had that problem.
Well, I could tell when you're not feeling well.
Okay.
My well-tanned brother.
You didn't take the bait.
Come on.
Okay.
I did not. But about 90 days ago, we started. Now, Robert is now the infamous international traveler.
Yeah.
I made it.
Well, you've been all over the world before this. I mean, you've traveled.
Well, no, I just went to Korea.
Okay.
I had never been to Europe.
And he's never
traveled like this before.
Not like this.
And yeah, from
no.
Now I know we're you know going on to all kinds of tangents, but I thought you knew Nashville, Bahamas, like Jacksonville.
I do know
you
that.
You told me you could take me places that I, you know, all over the island.
That I can do.
Okay.
But Europe, unfortunately, I never made it there, but this time I missed three international flights on one trip.
And that's a whole
story.
At least two or three segments alone. It is amazing what this gentleman went through to get over to Europe to really...
Just to have a horse burger.
To rendezvous with his son, to enjoy a couple days in Europe with his son, which is priceless, you know?
Yes.
An educational tour, and to come back. What this man endured, and I don't think his son will ever appreciate, because he was already over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eating the Wiener Schnitzel and the kebabs, all that kind of good stuff over there.
When people go overseas, though, I always like to ask, what's the strangest thing you ate over there? Did you have any horse? Come on, tell the truth. They eat over there. It's normal.
No, they do, and it's a pâté that they make in France. But for me...
It's raw?
It's
a whole new level.
It's more like it's just seared, quick seared, and it's like a pâté.
Okay.
I did not do that. I had all the beautiful French pastries.
Translation, it's galloping.
It's galloping. I had the beautiful French pastries, the good coffees. I also had, of course, probably it was more pasta dishes that they have. And on the last day in France, I did have a steak, but I have to tell you.
You have no idea what it was.
Well, it was... Sirloin, I understand. It looked like a regular
deal. Sure.
But it wasn't really that good. It wasn't better than what I can get here at Longhorns.
Well, I don't know that they have necessarily better food. They have different types of food.
But the desserts? Oh, I they were off the charts.
How are the cheeses and the wines?
Off the charts.
I have to say, when I was in Vienna for a year and a half, I have to say the wonderful experience that I had was going wine and cheese tasting. I wasn't a wine drinker, so I made the fatal mistake of not cleaning my palate with the wines.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went from taste pub to taste pub with cheeses. And we went into the last pub, and it smelled like feet.
Ugh.
It was bad. It smelled like a Foot Locker gone bad.
Well, we have just done a public service. We have some college students tuning in right now, deciding they're going to major in law.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They should.
Because they hear the type of experiences lawyers have in their free time.
That's right.
And they decide that, you know, I'm going to pursue law. Now, undergrad, you can major in anything.
Of course.
As long as you take the required...
Well, there's really no prerequisites to a law degree to go into law school. You have
to take the LSAT afterwards.
Well, that's not a prerequisite as far as a degree. Unlike a medical, you have to have certain sciences before you can take the MCAT.
Right.
So on the LSAT, you don't really have to have that. You have to have your 4-year degree. CIF the LSAT.
And anything.
But writing and logic, pretty much what the LSAT is addressing is your ability to comprehend, your ability to discern, your ability to logic. But writing, and that's where people get all hung up. It's like in science and math, for a doctor, it's chemistry. Organic chemistry tends to be the one that weeds people out. But actually today, something near and dear to your heart, as we're in this election cycle and election season, I want to give you a different view about how do you pick judges?
How do you pick them?
How do you pick them?
Because if a father and two sons were in a boat and they only had two apples, how do they share them? LSAT question number 29.
Mine was just take them both and eat them. No, that wasn't an answer, but we're gonna clue you in on something very important. And I'm telling you, what I like about this election season and election cycle is we're finally getting back to a principle, I hope, which has been largely displaced. The Constitution and the assignment of power within the Constitution, what a Constitution essentially does is it says, the power, and I always ask this question in civics and everything else, the Boy Scouts, where does the power come from?
Where does it come from?
We're going to answer that. Where does the power come from that is enshrined in the Constitution, and who is it giving the power to? Then when we talk about judges, judicial elections, you're going to understand today, better than probably most of the people out there, even some in other capacities, what it means to be a judicial officer. Call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge. We're here for you.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to the Lawyer's Edge here on WBOB. And taking your questions, this is the one forum where if you've got any legal question at all, you can call in. Although every situation is fact dependent, you know, you can generally get your legal questions answered, or at least get some direction. 904-222-TALK is the number, 904-222-8255. We have two attorneys here in the building with us right now. And they're here to answer your legal questions. But
you know, Roger, more importantly, we have six attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
That right now we have early voting going on. We have six attorneys running for, four of them for two county court seats, two of them for one circuit court seat. So I'm sure that maybe 10% of Duval County knows about the four candidates, and maybe about 13% of the three-county area knows about the two candidates. That's about how much education, that's a rough guess, that's throwing it off my hip, how much education our voters have on the judicial candidates. Really, because I've run a campaign, as a candidate, as a judicial candidate, you are restricted from talking about stuff.
Yes.
Your opinions, your positions.
Right. That's unique to the candidates running for judge. Well, if you're running for any other office, you can tell them where you stand.
Absolutely.
Judgeship candidates can't talk about the issues because they're not supposed to bring their personal biases into the courtroom. They're supposed to just interpret the law.
Supposed to.
Now, here's what's interesting. If you go back to our initial Constitution, do you know what year it came out?
1868.
The Florida Constitution.
Yes, the Florida Constitution.
I was thinking U.S., something in
1800s.
A big gap there. I was thinking 17-something, but anyway, go ahead.
1800s, but the current Constitution that we use is 1968. Now, the one going back was actually 1968. Yep, as amended, but that's...
As amended 1996, I believe, if I'm correct.
1968.
1968.
68, yeah.
But there's been a couple amendments since then.
Oh, it's been amended. We have constitutional revision commissions and all that. But I mean, the one from the 1800s, if you read it, it's actually somewhat funny. But when you get to the judiciary in the 1800s, all of the judicial officers were appointed. And guess what? The judges, the circuit court judges, could pick the attorneys to serve in the respective capacities in essence, their division and practice before them. So it was a very top-down, controlled environment back then.
But how were they appointed? I mean, was it the governor? The mayor? Did it go through a legislative approval committee, kind of like our federal justices?
Governor. There was no JNC back then.
No JNC, but I believe the House of Representatives would approve the appointments at some point, because it's been going back and forth between appointed, elected, then went back to appointed, went back to elected. There were 4 years, 10 years, 8 years.
The terms.
All the different levels of terms. Supreme Court justices were elected, and they were appointed, and they went back to elected, and now they're all appointed. Supreme Court judges and the Chief Justice, and then the appellate judges. So now our system is the appellate judges and the Supreme Court judges and the Chief Justice, they are appointed on the merit retention process. And our trial court judges, our circuit and county court judges, are elected.
And the reason that is because of the change of the Constitution. Now, here's what the Constitution essentially did. It allowed for each of the electorate to do and perform these elections, but they could opt out if they wanted to. So the counties can opt out if they choose to. None have. So what does that say? They want to elect their judicial officers, right? Of course. How important is that? Now, and I want to get into a term because this gets thrown out there. And we're going to give you today some meaningful way to help evaluate who the people are, aside from internet. You know, I see today, and this is what scares me. People will go on the internet, they look for about 5-10 minutes, and they have this belief that they actually know something. They may also talk to a friend, or they may find another attorney and say, what do you think of Mr. Smith? That's how, by and large, a lot of people do it. I know I get calls, and people say to me, before I go in there, who should I vote for? And my answer is, well, I know who I'm voting for. What is it you want to know or you want me to help you with to help you figure out who you're going to vote for?
Because when people ask me that, I don't tell them who I'm voting for.
Of course not.
I get several calls a day, especially since the mail-in ballots went out. Now it's early voting season right now. Is they're asking me, out of these six candidates, who would I vote for? I'm like, I'm not going to tell you who I would vote for because it's a personal decision. You need to know the candidates. And here we are as attorneys practicing alongside of some of these, or we know the names, and we as attorneys have a difficult time figuring out which candidate is best suited to sit behind the bench. It's not a popularity contest. Do not vote on a candidate, and this has nothing to do with any of these candidates, but don't vote because they have more money for that candidate. Do not vote for that candidate because they have more endorsements.
Now, how do you know if they have more money?
Well, look it up online.
It's public record.
Okay. Public record.
You can look at the Secretary of State or the Duval County Supervisor of Election for the county court races, and you can tell who's raised what money. But I'm telling you, just because you've raised money doesn't mean you're going to be a good judge. Okay? Just because you have all the endorsements from here to Timbuktu doesn't mean you're going to be a good judge. Because I tell you what, if you go to those endorsements, they might know them, but they don't know how they are as attorneys and how they are as practitioners and how they're going to be ultimately behind that bench. And I'm not speaking to any of the candidates today, whether they have endorsements, they don't have endorsements, whether they have money, they don't have money. I'm not saying anybody is more popular or better suited. What I'm trying to say is you've got to know the demeanor. The most important thing with the judicial candidate, I really believe, is knowing their demeanor, their tact, how they're prepared as attorneys, which is going to be a great indicator of how they're prepared as a judge sitting in front of you. Are they going to read the case? Are they going to read the docket? Okay. Are they in their mannerisms? Do they look professional? Do they hold themselves? Do they have a high level of esteem for themselves and pride? You know, and I'm not comparing Army and Marine Corps, but
There's no comparison, by the way, in case we were.
Exactly. He's already acquiesced that the Marine Corps is our way up here. So, but the Marine Corps, we pride ourselves in a certain level of perfection. Not saying we are perfect. We're not all perfect. None of us are perfect. There's one person perfect, right? But we pride ourselves in being prepared and being right and having a certain amount of tact and decisiveness, leadership traits. So how do we get that information out to the public so they can make an informed decision on whether or not Maureen Hork and Charles McBurney, which one's the better choice for that circuit court seat? Michael Batte, Joel Wilkerson, which one's better for that county court seat? Larae Hendricks, Kim Sadler, which one's better for that county court seat? All these people, I know all six of them, okay? All six of them have unique characteristics and traits as practitioners and as individuals that are good for the bench and maybe not so good for the bench when you compare that to the other candidate they're running against. So, but how do Joe and Mary Voter, how do they know this stuff?
Well, let me give you a couple of ideas. One is, while the judicial candidate cannot give, in essence, an advisory opinion on what they would do if a certain case were before them. For example, if Roger would ask, well, I want to know if you were dealing with a case involving eminent domain, these facts, what would you do? No, they can't say that. Here's what he can say. And this is what I'm trying to get a hold of here is, it may sound as a cliche, overused phrase, but we'll talk about this and kick this around. It's called judicial philosophy. What does that mean to you? Well, if I were to ask you, Roger, you've been managed by other people in your lifetime. Everyone's worked for someone. If I were to ask you, what philosophy do you like of a manager? Do you like someone who's a micromanager? Do you like someone who delegates? Do you like someone who, again, the modern term, empowers you to be a decision maker and take charge of your particular area? Who do you like to work for? You'd probably know. You've worked for a number of people, so you'd be able to tell me. That's kind of what it means when we say, what is the judicial philosophy of the person? Well, here's what you hear on the street. In fact, I hope to be having this conversation. Ed Dean, I hope you're listening. You and I got some business we got to talk about left over from when we were talking the other day. Judicial philosophy, what do I mean? I say to you, Roger, tell me of the past Chief Justice. He's a big guy, Chief Justice Rehnquist. What was his judicial philosophy? Can you tell me?
Strict, conservative, constitutional, gosh, I'm slipping tongue. I'm listening to all this information. Basically, strict, constitutional. He interpreted the Constitution as it was written.
Okay.
Am I right? I know I misworded it. But
that's one of his. He was a big states' writer. He believed in the 10th Amendment. Now, okay. I want to hold you to the words you just said. Now,
okay.
The whole world is listening. Because everyone can, that's why I hate labels, because people can use a label and it sounds like they know something. Tell us what it means, what you just said. Now, break it down. Tell me what it means. What does it mean to be a whatever you just said?
Well, basically, he looks at the Constitution
yep.
and decides and tries to figure out what it was that the authors of the Constitution meant to say.
Okay, now.
And then interprets the law based upon what they meant.
Now, a lot of people out in the street, those of you who are listening,
that
I know.
David.
Yes, they could articulate what you just said, but okay. Here's the problem. You still haven't said anything yet, because now I'm going to ask you the next layer of words or get to the next layer through this question. This is where you're going to fall apart. So are you listening? So listen closely.
Wow.
How are you going to determine, Roger, what is the language in the Constitution? How are you going to determine what they meant by those words? And how are you going to interpret the Constitution? How are you going to do that, Roger?
I'd read the Constitution.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a great start.
That's a good start.
Okay.
Now what? You come up on the language.
And then cross-reference it with
what?
Whatever case is before me.
Okay. How do you know, for example, and I'm just saying is, let's take a good one. Let's take a good one.
You have no idea what's going through my mind, David.
Of course you don't. No, because you're reaching the point, we call it in the law, but those of you who are in theology, you know this because you go through this drill as well.
Okay.
It's called an interpretive aid. What interpretive aid is that person going to use which helps them discern what the language means? So, for example, make believe in the Constitution there is a constitutional provision that says the governor has the right to appoint. There's also a constitutional provision which says circuit court judges, county court judges, unlike other judges, shall be elected. How do you resolve those two provisions? Now, you can read it. I'm just telling you, you can read it 12 times if you want to. Those provisions aren't going to tell you any more than what they say. And they say what they say. Now, how do you balance those two provisions and figure out in a particular set of facts, when can the governor appoint and when do the people have the right to an election when a vacancy is created?
Well, I would look at history, and I think what you
history.
Guys call in law.
What history? Wait.
Court
what
precedence?
History? No, wait. What history? You got to be specific here. You're writing this up.
Are there history? Is there any history of any cases that were similar? And how were they interpreted? I think that would be a good place to start.
So you just said precedent, but I'm saying the language of the Constitution. How are you going to figure out in 1968 when they put this in,
mm-hmm.
what everybody meant? And do you think when the people put those provisions in there, any provisions, that they understood all the scenarios that could come up that possibly could affect this or that? Of course not. So again, your judicial philosophy, my friend, interpretive aids. You're listening to A Lawyer's Edge. Call us. We want your input. 222-TALK. We're here for you.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Nebraska has carried out its first execution since 1997 with the lethal injection of Kerry Dean Moore, who fatally shot two cab drivers almost four decades ago. Moore was executed this morning with a combination of four drugs that have never been used before in a U.S. execution. Britain's government says it's keeping its threat level for terrorism at severe after a car slammed into a barrier outside the Houses of Parliament. They've taken a 20-year-old man into custody. They say they suspect terrorism was a motive, but it's not official at this point. The latest Rasmussen presidential tracking poll showing that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance. The latest figures include 35% who strongly approve of the way the president is performing. On Wall Street right now, the Dow is performing well. It's up by 125 points. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. It's the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
This is Bill Martin with God First Ministries. I want to encourage you to live your life with a vision for eternity. John 3:16 says, God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Sometimes we can get so caught up in this life that we lose focus on eternity, how real and vibrant life will be throughout eternity. Imagine yourself 10,000 years from now. Many of the things that now seem so important will then be of no value. We can live life now with a focus on eternity, envisioning what will really be important throughout all eternity.
This message has been brought to you by God First Ministries of Jacksonville. For more information, visit their website at godfirstmin.com.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church, invites you to worship with them. 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study. 10:45 a.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Wednesday, Bible Q&A with fellowship meal. They're located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road in the heart of Mandarin, just 1 mile south of I-295.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge. I'm Roger Henderson, not a lawyer, but Robert Slama and David Trotty are here taking your questions too at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. And getting a little law school today, huh?
It's a big law school lesson right there.
Big law school lesson.
And it's a lot to take in. It's very complicated. But it is the root of our judicial system, and when you bring a case in front of the court, whether it's a county court, circuit court, appellate court, or Supreme Court, is you have to know who your audience is. And, you know, trial courts, county courts, one judge. DCA, you're in a panel of three, unless you have en banc, which is the whole kin caboodle. Then, of course, the Supreme Court is a seven-justice panel. So you have to know who your audience is, where they are in their theories of how they interpret the Constitution and the laws of the state of Florida. So, but let's,
and if you end up before you know, a court, you don't have you don't pick who your judge is going to be.
Not in the appellate level.
Not necessarily. You are randomly assigned, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Supposed to be. Now, whether or not that's true, I wonder sometimes.
We want, but let me ask you something.
It changes.
And let me digress back to when we first started the last segment. Is I am not saying that endorsements are not important. I am not saying people who can raise funds for a campaign, that ability is not important, because, you know, having the our firemen, our FOP, whether it's elected official, whether it's a mayor, former mayors, councilmen, councilwomen, having those people endorse a candidate is very important because they represent the people.
Mm-hmm.
They are in the community. They are our first responders. They are elected officials. So those endorsements are very, very important. But as the constituents, when you're looking at the individual candidates, that is one box you need to look at. But you need to look past those boxes, because sometimes the people who are endorsing, I don't say it all the time, but they don't know or they don't understand when they're endorsing the difference between that candidate they're endorsing and the other candidate, and what that candidate or those candidates might bring to the bench that might be different from each other. Not, you know, endorsement should not be who's the better golf player, or who goes to more events, or who's seen more in public, or who shakes your hand more, okay? Especially in the judicial races. We have to know our candidates. And right now, in Florida, how our election system set up for judicial races, it does not afford the public the opportunity to really know who the candidates are, okay? And we have to figure out some way to fix that. You see these judicial candidate races spending, well, I spent almost, you know, $80,000 in my race, and that was just under a third of what my opponent ran. Now, he ran 22 months, I ran 3 months. But if he spent over $200,000 and the salary is almost half of that, why does that? That doesn't make sense.
What's the incentive? Yeah, of their own money. But another thing too.
What's their own money and money that they raise?
You talk about money in political campaigns. Would you say that there's potentially at least an unfair advantage that people who are either very wealthy themselves or have access to very wealthy people can end up having an advantage over people who don't have necessarily the same resources?
I said in a previous segment, someone asked, "How do you educate the voters? How do you get the message out there?" And I said, what? Show me the money. And that's the problem with how our current system is set up. I walk in there with a judicial race. You better come in there with a minimum of $100,000. That's crazy. A minimum of $100,000 to show that you are a serious candidate. Okay? Now, there are candidates who have a lot of political connections, namesakes, that type of stuff, that they can just put their name in a hat and they're going to have $50,000 in 48 hours. That does happen, okay? But it costs money. The cost of mail's going up. The cost of the media advertisement
TV
is going up. TV, I spent, I think, $26,000, almost $30,000 in TV. I believe my opponent spent well over $50,000, almost $60,000 for local broadcast stations. It's incredible. But you know what? In that 30-second commercial or in a 15-second radio spot, you're not educating the voter. You're getting your name out there, name, 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 name. But the voter still isn't educated on which candidate is the better candidate to be behind that bench. And the importance of that, Robert, you understand this as a fellow attorney. You should understand this as a constituent and somebody that hopefully will never come in front of the bench. But if you do, your elected official, your judicial officer, has a direct effect on you as the voter. Now, many of our voters won't ever see a judge, but many of you will, in whether it's a probate issue, a traffic court issue, hopefully not a divorce, hopefully not, definitely not a criminal case, but you have a friend or relative that will see a judge. And a judge is the one elected official that has a direct effect on the voter. Direct effect. There is no middleman. Okay, you come in. How do you plead, sir?
guilty or not guilty? Not guilty. Set the bond at X, or set the bond at X, or we're not going to release you, or we're going to, or are you released on your own recognizance? That's the criminal context. Or you have a domestic violence context. You go in within 14 days of being of a petition for a domestic violence injunction, civil injunction. You go in. That judge has a direct impact on your constitutional rights.
Let me say this. This is what, these judges, these circuit, not county, circuit judges, they're involved in every aspect of your life, Roger. So, for example, what David's saying, taking away your right to bear arms in a 30-minute hearing, if you get that, that person who's sitting up there, who there are rules and things to follow, do you think every judge follows those rules?
Oh, no.
No. Some listen to evidence, some don't. It's all part of the process. That's why who that person is very important. To me, what I look to is first is, I've clerked at all levels, from the Oklahoma State Supreme Court, the Oklahoma Court of Appeals, the Federal District Court, and the Federal Bankruptcy Court. I've seen a few judges over 26 years. The ones that I say are the best are the ones who do not see themselves as supreme rulers. They see themselves as subservient to that Constitution. In other words, when they look, Judge Melton from Jacksonville, District Court judge, fabulous, fabulous person, fabulous jurist, never saw themselves as bigger than the, I would say, the, you know, the robe that they put on. Some think they're much bigger than the robe that they put on. But it's when they always possess and have this reverence for the Constitution, because now I'm going to answer the question that I posed earlier. When we talk about the Constitution assigns power, which it does, it not only creates an architecture for government, which it does, it establishes things. After it establishes things, what does it do? It has to assign power to them, or in some institutions, it assigns a little bit, and some it assigns a lot, and some it assigns none, almost none. It's just a place, a holding spot. Where does that assignment of power come from? Very important that we understand this.
I would say God.
Well, ultimately, yes. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, yes. But it's the sovereign right of the people. In other words, here's what happened when the Constitution was formed. Go back to the documents. We the people, in order to form a more
perfect
union, what do we do? Notice who the we is. Have you heard government yet? No. We do hereby ordain and establish what?
This Constitution.
This government. The Constitution is the document that establishes the government, but who established the government? This is what I'm saying. I give the civics because I look at people and they don't know what they're in. We the people do hereby ordain and establish this.
The people run the government.
They are the government.
The government doesn't run the people.
There you go.
And we...
At least not in America.
Not in America. At least it's not supposed to be. So now what I'm saying is this. Now follow this.
Okay.
Because then later I'll mention the thing about David's situation. David, of course, the Florida Supreme Court has accepted discretionary jurisdiction to review his case. Thank God, because we're finally going to get an answer to a question which had to be resolved. But ultimately, as you go to that voters, you as a voter, go to that little ballot box, and David has named six names. Do you know what you're getting ready to do? You are taking your sovereignty, which is yours and yours exclusively, and you are now handing it to those people to be your rulers. But they, under our Constitution, can only rule by consent of the governed.
That's right.
So what we're saying here is, today or tomorrow, if you're doing your early voting, or if you're voting for whomever, the president, the judiciary, whoever it is, when Roger goes to that ballot box, here's what he's saying. And it's important people understand this.
And it's not a beauty contest.
It's not a beauty contest. I, my founders, my family, we established this Constitution because through it we established this government. And today we exercise our sovereignty, our right at the ballot box to tell people in this government who is going to get to rule over us. And it is done by our consent, no one else's. Call us at 222-TALK, The Lawyer's Edge.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back. It's the final segment of today's edition of The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama, attorney at law, and David P. Trotty, also attorney at law, and learning a whole lot. Big legal class going on today. Real quick, guys, how do they get in touch with you? Your website and phone numbers?
By the way, information on David's case and such, please go to The Lawyer's Edge on Facebook, and we're posting stuff, information there. My website is forthefamilyjacks.com, and you can call me at 296-1050. That's 296-1050. David?
I love it. I love it. You can just reach me at dptrottylaw.com, dptrottylaw.com.
I want to read a quote, and this is to help guide people. And this is a quote from a guy that we should be somewhat familiar with.
Should know him.
We should know him. He was the first Chief Justice of the United States. This is what I keep in mind when I think of a judge. When people ask me and they say, what's important do you think in judging? I think first is judgment. Remember Solomon? He said, above all these things, get wisdom, because with wisdom comes understanding. Every person that puts on a black robe doesn't have wisdom and doesn't have understanding. So I look at their personal experience and understanding of how they're going to handle things. Not everybody understands people, and not everybody cares about people. Here's what Alexander Hamilton said in Federalist Number 78. Until the people have, by some solemn and authoritative act, annulled or changed the established form, it is binding upon themselves collectively as well as individually, and no presumption or even knowledge of their sentiments can warrant their representatives in a departure from it prior to such an act. But it is easy to see that it would require an uncommon portion of fortitude in the judges to do their duty as faithful guardians of the Constitution, where legislative invasions of it had been instigated by the major voice of the community. What our good friend Alexander Hamilton is talking about here is two things. Our judges are guardians of the Constitution. Second is, there will be encroachments. Here he says by the legislative, he didn't need to stop there because the executive can encroach. But there's a third body that can encroach. Who is that? The judiciary. In other words, when people ask me, can the judiciary step on the toes of the legislative bodies or the executive through interpretation? That's why interpretation is such a dangerous thing. Here's what he last said. It is known as, through our good friend Alex de Tocqueville, it's called tyranny of the majority. In other words, majoritarian rule, which is what you want in a democracy, can also work evil, even though it's the majority. That's where we speak of, generally. When we talk about individual liberty and individual rights, we talk about the Bill of Rights, which they insisted upon. Why? To make sure that as you build a republic, you remember what Jefferson said, how this republic can end up being, in many ways, just like the king. In other words, can you tell me, Roger, that our republic may not engage in acts of tyranny just like a king? And the answer was, that's why the individuals cloaked with the Bill of Rights, which later was expanded under the 14th Amendment, mm-hmm. that if we cloak them with these rights and we have a limited form of government, which is what we're supposed to have, then we have the 10th Amendment, which says, The states continue to be states, and they have, it's the Reserve Powers Clause, all those rights that are not delegated to the republic belong to us. So who were the major actors in this republican form of government? First, it's the people because they created it. Second, it's the states. Third and last is the republic. It was supposed to be only that which was necessary to do the things that we couldn't do. Look at Article 1, Section 8, commerce. Mm-hmm. The states alone, do you want them developing treaties with different state or different countries? No. What about the common defense? That's why if you go back, and I tell everyone this, most lawyers don't understand what I'm telling you. Before you get to the Constitution, you got to look at the Declaration of Independence. You got to look at the indictment of the king. The Constitution was designed to cure the ills that they saw and they so eloquently talked about. It was an exclusive list. Go back in the left hand tonight, Roger. Read the Declaration of Independence. Then set the Constitution next to it. If you can't see those provisions and how they were trying to fix what was being done by the king, then you missed it. But what you're going to see is they're almost mirror images of each other.
Right.
So now let's talk about judges and the judiciary, where David is and where David's headed. The judicial officers you're getting ready to pick, and you're doing it as we speak, these aren't just people, a pretty face in a robe, standing in front of you and saying, hey, these three organizations think I'm great. Let's talk about what these circuit court judges first handle. They handle eminent domain. Friends, if you got a business out there and the city of Jacksonville is getting ready to do a project, they can wipe out your business, take it, we call the takings, and go ahead and pay you supposedly fair value. But what about if you've been on that corner for 23 years and if they take your business, David, you're done. How would you like it if they took David Trotty's office on the corner of Atlantic right before the Hart Bridge? Because now, well, they got to make that, I guess they want to make it four lanes.
A bigger turn lane.
They need a bigger turn lane, and you're in the way. So we're going to take little David's business. We'll pay him, you know, I don't know, $180,000. Okay, great. But what does that do for your business, David? Now you have to be where?
We have to either relocate.
Sure.
Or you're going to be, you know, 15 feet closer to the trucks roaring by.
Sure. Know?
And that does affect. It affects.
Huge effect.
It affects your business, especially when you're in a – I'm in an office right on Atlantic Boulevard, and the traffic there – and you're right. If there was a need for the city to expand Atlantic Boulevard, my office would be in trouble because right now we are at the corner of, you know, the Hart Bridge, Episcopal High School, that area. And the traffic noise – I'm getting at it. The traffic noise itself is already intrusive – to your practice. You're in the morning rush hour, whether it's in the morning or in the afternoon, it's loud. It's encroaching. So now let's put this traffic 15 feet even closer. Not only do you have a safety issue, because now the traffic is within probably 10 feet of your structure,
but your ability to serve your clients,
your ability to serve your clients is now immensely encroached upon. And so now a circuit court judge.
And then it could be even an accessibility factor where people can't as easily access your
Absolutely.
Parking lot.
Absolutely.
Of course. And they've already done that. You know, several years ago, you used to be able to turn left. If you're heading east on Atlantic, you'd be able to turn left right down our street. Well, they took that out when they built the Raceway gas station across the street. And now you have to go further down towards Empire Point, make the U-turn, which is dangerous in itself, time-consuming, you know, all left-hand turns on your car, never good for your tires. But you have to make this U-turn now and then turn right. So it's not that it can't be done, but, you know, it's the people vote on these things, but really who rules on it is a circuit court judge.
One person, your future, your life. What about David's ability to earn an income and pay for his college, his young son's eventual college education?
If he gets accepted.
He will.
If he applies.
He will.
If he passes high school.
That I'm not so sure of. that maybe not.
I love you, Dominic. You're awesome.
We can get him caught somewhere.
But you see, and I'm just giving you one instance. That's a business issue. Mm-hmm. What about religious liberty? What about, as you know, the cases involving our good friend the baker, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a judge at the lowest level that ruled first on his case and makes a ruling that can change your life, affect your conscience, your beliefs. Circuit court judges in criminal cases are ruling on the death penalty.
Well, look what just happened. right here in our circuit. We had a great judge who stood up, Judge Walensky.
Yep.
He stood up and he made a ruling under our 742 of the Florida statute, the paternity statute, and said, if you are a biological father of a child that was born during a marriage, so in other words, there was an affair, but you were out of the marriage and the child was born during a marriage, prior to this Supreme Court case that just fell down, you were out. You were on the streets. You had no rights to fight to see your child.
Because of the presumption.
Presumption.
That the child is...
So
it's even without DNA testing.
Even if he had, you know, there's three boxes to check, and he had all three boxes checked that he was the father. He had every single right to be the father. The child wanted him to be the father. The mom wanted him to be the father. The dad wanted him to be the father. Because of presumption, he couldn't be the father because he was out looking in.
Yep.
So we had a judge, Judge Walensky. He went out and he ruled against the presumption, okay, against the precedent, and guess what? It was appealed. That is the only way that that case finally made it up to the Supreme Court, and that presumption was overturned. And now, if you are a biological father and the child was born during an intact marriage and you were not the husband, which you shouldn't have done this anyway, but this is what happened. Or just say you and Mary had y'all were together prior to her and Johnny getting married, but the conception happened, but the baby was born during their marriage. You had no rights. But now you have rights. Why? Because you have a circuit judge sitting on the bench, and he made a bold decision to say, this is what's right. And it went against the grain. It went against the case law and the precedents. And now we had a Supreme Court decision that was overturned. Kind of like we have a judge in Leon County who went against the grain, made a decision based on his interpretation of the statute, the Constitution, the case precedent, the Supreme Court decisions. And now where do we find ourselves? Because he made a decision to go against what some would say would be the precedents, which we don't believe it is the precedents. We are now in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court now has the opportunity to make a decision on this case. It takes great circuit court judges, great county court judges to make a difference. Otherwise, if we're just going to go a status quo and roll over, our laws will not be upheld correctly.
Every day, judges are either preserving your liberty or they're helping foster tyranny, and it's done so in a controlled way. That is what Alexander Hamilton is saying, that the judges following the masses, not having the guts, the will, or the understanding to stand up for the Constitution and what it says, will allow your rights, which is why I'm a civil rights attorney, allow your rights to go right down the tube. I watch it every day. Some can, some don't. If you don't think outside influences affect some of the folks or their own constituency, it does. Having said that, go to the Lawyer's Edge. I'm putting stuff on there to help you with the elections, stuff that we do on the air, but also David's case is a groundbreaking, finally trying to put the Constitution right back in its place as it relates to judicial elections. I've got information on there about that, but you can certainly call us 296-1050, and I am happy that we get to educate everyone as we do this show. And David?
And know who you're voting for.